All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Welcome to John Bowd's All the Rage. Look, me and John were just chatting. I think if you're in the mainstream media and you're listening to this, you listen to the recording, or if you're listening to this just as a listener. Here in the UK, I have to admit, I thought the mainstream media was pretty low, certainly since the election, leading up to the election last year, and Trump before that. But lately, I've got to say, they have hit an all-time low, and that includes the BBC. John pretty much is very angry, so let's get it going. Take it away, John.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. The conversation we were having off air could fill half the show. I did actually have a plan for this evening, but I seem to be veering away from it. I tell you what, I will mention that. I'll come back to it near the end because I do think it's pertinent to tonight's subject, which of course is the decline of British culture, part two. Because last week we covered music in particular, and my feeling that certainly since the 90s and the co-option of the musical art form into more and more moneyed mainstream acceptance, it's really lost any of its bite and rebellion. This week we're going to talk a little bit more about first television and then wider politics. And just to remind everyone, the reason I'm talking about this is because I think it's hugely relevant to the way people perceive the world. And again, I'll come back to an example of what I saw this evening. Firstly, I just want to say, for anyone who listened to the bonus bit last week, thank you for persevering. I wanted to do an extra part of Rhianne E. Jones's book, Clampdown, which I really like. And I'm glad I did it, but to be honest, I did go on a little bit. I didn't plan it that well, and I didn't realise it went on for nearly an hour. So it was quite a slog to get through. So apologies. This show, at the stage we're at the moment, All the Rage, is a little more experimental, so we're trying out new stuff. And I would happily do bonus episodes in future if Dave doesn't mind editing them, but what I will do is actually plan them a lot better. But I hope you got something out of listening to it. Anyway, so, specifically, much of what we discussed last week and also in relation to this week was my opinion of the damage that can be done by being stuck in the past and not having the drive or the daring to move forward anymore, culturally speaking, especially. And this is very apparent in television. I don't want to spend this show going on just about TV shows that I think are crap, because what's the point? And the fact that I hate the mainstream, well, I have since I was a teenager, that's nothing new. But I want to talk a little bit more specific. I'm going to start again this week with a theorist who we mentioned last week, the late, very great Mark Fisher. And he wrote a lot about television and music as well as culture. He wrote the great book Capitalist Realism, talked about, you know, alternative culture and mindsets and stuff like that. And he very much pointed out that television suffers from the same nostalgic obsessions as British music and daily cultural life. In fact, in my opinion, I'd argue it's worse. From afternoon sleepy shows about nice murders in nice parts of the country to endless repeats from the 70s and the 80s, if not the defining programmes of the early part of the last decade, if anyone can think of any, the only one I can think about are the program, the talking head programs about how much we all loved the 70s, the 80s and the 90s. It doesn't seem to have been anything else apart from reality TV. It is as if, as Mark Fisher once wrote, the future has been cancelled. He had a great quote: in conditions of digital recall, loss is itself lost. This is coupled with the almost complete dominance of anti-intellectualism. Programs, especially drama, must be simplistic for fear of losing the viewer. Adaptation like the Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy that came out in the 70s with Alec Guinness, that would likely struggle to get commissioned today. However, we did see in the early part of the last decade, a frothing love was displayed for the program Life on Mars. In my opinion, a totally reactionary show about how much better the 1970s were for policing, when coppers could beat the shit out of people with impunity and whack office girls on the arse. We even got a pin-up out of this, of a sort, in the shape of Gene Hunt, a thug who was worshipped by the Daily Mail for his violence and abuse, all in the name of the law. A useful working-class stooge, too, in my opinion. Meanwhile, within the 1970s and 80s nostalgia industry, that took a battering after Operation U-Tree earlier this decade, and all the revelations of how many TV presenters committed gross sexual crimes. not such sweet better times now, as one for one reason we're reminded this was possible due to the complete lack of respect accorded to women and children during the 1970s and 80s. Something also underlined by the writer David Peace and the adaptations of his books Red Riding. I believe they're on the Channel 4 replay channel, OD or whatever they call it now. Red Riding's well worth watching, and no doubt the books are worth reading too. The biggest effect that concerns me on TV today and wider media is a diverse, positive representation of the working class. Or rather, what concerns me is the fact that I don't ever see one. Getting strong, accurate representations of working class people and life in television, however, has never really happened in most mainstream programme, not least in comedy, where we see obsessions with the past really chronic. Many channels continually repeat shows that had a quaint but ultimately disrespectful view of working class people, from Porridge and Steptoe and Son to Dad's Army, but one in particular I want to discuss is Only Fools and Horses. In some ways, this is a divisive show, I think, in regards to how it portrays working class people. On the one hand, we have the undeniable love of the characters, the writer John Sullivan and the actors who played them clearly had, but also the main character, the lovable rogue that is Del Boy, is frankly a spiv and a criminal. Among other things, he sells dodgy and stolen goods and he rips people off. Plus, on many occasions, we laugh at his crass lack of sophistication. The roles for women in that show are pretty weak too, but later on, I think, when the characters of Cassandra and Raquel came along, they got a little bit better. But the point of me bringing this up, though, is that this view of working-class geezers making dough off the stupid and the gullible people around them is something I think is pretty insulting. Dale is a greedy character, and yes, he loses out quite often, but he also never really changes, which to me indicates that he and his type are naturally unable to play straight, and therefore attracting another stigma that we have towards people in our working class people in our society. And of course, let's not forget, all of this is played for a laugh. I will say this though, those characters in that show do have a great sense of loyalty and love for one another, which is also not something you see in modern programming of that mocks the working class, such as Little Britain. There's a scene I remember actually at the end of one series when Del's son has been born and he holds him looking out the window of the hospital over London, and it's quite a moving scene actually. And all due respect to David Jason, because he's super cool. Anyway, getting slightly distracted here. The reason I brought that show up. Also to say what is absolutely inarguable is that programme has been repeated on TV so many times that it's actually become completely unwatchable for me. It is a nostalgia fest for the broken nation that is unwilling to move forward. And yes, I probably am taking this too seriously, but I don't care. Like all mentioned programmes, Only Fools and Horses is one of many endlessly repeated sitcoms about cheeky, cheery, working class folk who are usually dodgy but ultimately lovable, but should not be helped to improve their lot in life because they don't deserve it, basically. Now, before I move on to the next bit, Dave, you can have a quick song if you like, or what do you want to add to my tirade?
No, I'm not adding to it. I agree with it. To a certain degree, they do give out. I'm just laughing at Only Fools and Horses, but I think UK Gold do put out a warning before. But I think they do play it because it's popular. But maybe it's popular, but we find it acceptable. Maybe it's an age thing. John Bowd's All the Rage. You'll be back in a minute.
John Bowd's All the Rage. All the on Tracks FM. Tracks FM.
How you gonna sleep tonight?
Dean Char and Holiday Destination. You listen to John Bowers' All the Rage. Now, we call it All the Rage because I actually saw a wicked clip of Dick Emery, you know, and we laugh. I thought it was funny, you know. Oh, honky tonk. Something. Did you have it hard last night? And he went, I bet you did. John, take it away.
Yes, I come back to a point I made a few shows ago. Knowing your past is vital, living in it is deadly. I'm not saying, you know, don't enjoy the show, but for God's sake, can we commission some new sitcoms once in a while and not make them about middle class people having troubles making Google work? And, you know, just ever give us something that's actually funny. Anyway, aside from sitcoms, I got that bit out of the way to begin with because I wanted to get to the far darker hub problem I have with television. And that's aside from the general level of crap. It's actually just the amount of working class hating programs. First, we have cultural replacement programs like Strictly Come Dancing and the talent shows, where we see lots of people who we could describe as amateur at best participating in activities that can and sometimes do make them famous or more so. This, of course, puts fame at the center of identity. We should all chase this and not worry about talent or producing anything of any worth or what's going on in the real world. And also, the reason I have a problem with this kind of improvement, if you like to call it that, is about leaving behind where you come from and or where you are now. It is really underlined by a sense of shame about being a nobody. To give you an example, we don't have a Britain's Got Talented Trade Unionists TV show, although where you can imagine that you go on and like, how many cases did you have this year? You know, how many people did you stop from getting fired? You know, how many people did you get decent retirement for? I think that's something worth celebrating. However, all of this is reinforced by a media that then demands engagement in the minute detail of these people's actions and lives, as if any of that was of interest or mattered. Also, all of the people in these hideous shows are crap, whatever they do, so fuck them. You don't get great culture from, you know, aping end of the pier dross. Next, however, we have the real damage. Jeremy Vile, and yes, I know that's not his name, but I refuse to use his real one, a little bit like Little Tommy. Jeremy Vile, whose show only exists to sneer at society's failures and encourage you to do the same, rather than improving anything or joining together to overthrow scum like him. This bully makes an effort to find the dumb, the gullible, and the vulnerable solely to shame them on TV and see if he can actually find a complete collection of teeth from an entire series. The way that he displays people on there and humiliates them is... actually, you know what? You call me a snowflake. I genuinely find it makes me feel physically sick if I ever catch any of Jeremy. I can even see it without sound if I'm in the gym or something. I have to turn my back. It's just appalling. Then we have all of the pro-police programs, which communicate the message that we are all a rabble that have to be controlled by a bunch of uniformed thugs with an inbuilt hatred of ethnic minorities and the poor. As a comedian Bill Hicks once commented, shows like Cops, which was the US version we had in the early 90s, for those of you who don't remember it, these programs are designed to desensitize policemen or similar enforcement groups kicking your door in. All of the people on these shows are hideous living caricatures who you are encouraged to believe basically deserve a good beating or dragging through the streets. Of course, you would be intensely stupid to imagine that you are in a position of any difference to them. Another level down from that, we have the programs celebrating the bullying filth that are bailiffs. These knuckle draggers wander into the homes and businesses of vulnerable people and take possessions of their personal belongings. There's no word in it about how the debt that they owe was created, nothing to do with the system that we exist under or the crooked actions of salesman, bank or landlord. All of the victims have committed the sin of owing money, and none have the economic or social capital to get decent legal representation most of the time. The most powerful creation of capitalism is debt, and it's spotlit here, but instead it's spotlit so that we can shame the people who are owing something to their betters. It's quite Victorian, actually. This is what passes for documentary representations of working class people and culture these days, along with shows about people on benefits, which act as a sort of extension of the cheeky, cheery geezer of sitcoms, except they are designed to help justify public spending cuts and demonisation of the poor. In his book Chavs, Owen Jones, happy birthday today, by the way, mate, detailed the war waged on the working class in Britain, and the media have a major role in doing this. He mentioned the case from many years ago now of Shannon Matthews, who was a young girl from a very poor estate in the north who went missing. And it later emerged that her mother, and along with some of her relatives, had actually kidnapped her own daughter in order to try and raise some money as part of a campaign. The middle-class newspaper hacks and the blurting TV pundits exploded with condemnation, not so much for this one woman and her damaged family, but the whole community. The area of Dewsbury Moor, where around 90% of the inhabitants actually worked, was painted as a dull, scrounging hellhole full of people going to buy alcohol in their pyjamas at midday. Somebody in The Sun managed to somehow liken it to Beirut. I don't know if anyone in The Sun has ever visited Beirut specifically in the 1980s when there was a war going on. But it didn't look like Dewsbury Moor. This was then followed, of course, inevitably, by Conservative politicians using all of this as an example of broken Britain and the need to punish collectively those on benefits. This was, as far as the mainstream was concerned, the end of the working class, and what you had now was a feral underclass, dehumanised and condemned. Again, remember this when you see some cocky goatee having plastic pig on TV tackling one of these people to the floor. This is what you're supposed to think of them. This is what you're supposed to see. What was totally ignored, as Jones points out, is what an overall decent community Dewsbury Moor was. Upon hearing of the young girl's disappearance, people had taken to the streets in all weathers to search for her, even looking into hiring coaches that could take them to the next city to widen the search. They took all this very, very seriously. Then, of course, we have the fascination with the far right and endless shows about the left-behind white people in towns that used to have industry and now, through some kind of magic, appear to have nothing. Naturally, our programme makers become sociologists for a day and are eager to examine the reasons why people with fuck-all prospects in modern Britain might turn to anti-immigrant extremes. Of course, the reasons are always the same, a lack of community bonds that were destroyed by the Conservatives in the establishment onslaught of the 1980s, and councils that have been grossly underfunded since, not to mention all the homes that have been sold off for private gain. The people that they bring on these programmes, however, are always the ones that just blame immigrants or Muslims, or occasionally women and the odd gay person. Nothing is more grinding to me, and what is left of my brain, not to mention my teeth, than seeing people in towns that have been destroyed by deindustrialisation sitting around complaining about other working class people, such as immigrants who rarely actually come to their towns in the first place, and signing up to the ideals of the Conservatives or even UKIP, who are directly responsible for this misery. We also learn nothing from any of this, such as the entirety of the BBC's White Season from a few years ago, in which I just couldn't believe they were slapping this human shit on the TV, and I don't know what point they were trying to prove with it, I really don't. But I'm really not very happy with the BBC tonight, so let's move on. We are now seeing a legitimisation of the far right again in mainstream British society. While we hear about the terrible victimhood of little Tommy, the Muslim hater and former wife beater, and his followers smash up bookshops, TV shows air their factless views, and columnists, probably journalism's second vilest offspring, demand that they are heard. The dangers increase in real terms towards ethnic minorities, the LGBT community, especially transgender people, and Muslim people in particular. Meanwhile, most of the rest of you just sit around and keep watching TV. All of this is like everything in life when you come down to the lowest level. It's all about power. Now, everyday relations, especially for a certain type of man, are all about domination of the petty world around you. From the gym to how you speak to staff in shops or other interactions that you have with them, there is lots of microaggressions in which many of these people try to make out that they are in control of something or have power over others. Modern masculinity is a cesspit of backward meatheads without the social skills to even hold a conversation, and usually plenty of misogynist and homophobic views mixed in. someone noted on a program the Channel 4 showed a few years ago, one of Grayson Perry's fantastic programs that he often does, that there was an uptake of gym usage in Sunderland, which happened to run in line with the deindustrialisation in that city. As many factories shut and gyms opened, sometimes in the very same premises, young men arrived to build something, but in this case it was their own bodies. Many of them remained unemployed, but they could spend their days working and socialising in a factory for the self, which is well worth pondering and considering, I think. Dave, over to you.
Well, thanks very much, John. Just before we go to the music break, just a couple of questions, if we're going to go on about anti-Semitism and asking people in the street what they think about Muslims wearing the burqa and special radio stations making special shows on anti-Semitism and certain politicians. That's fine. Can we have special shows and programmes on Grenfell? Can we have a special shows and dedicate, devote all that time, as we have done on anti-Semitism, on Windrush? Can we have a special show or shows and devoted time on Baroness, was it Warris or Warsey, a Conservative MP who has been abused because she's Muslim, and she's inquired about Islamophobia within the Conservative Party? No shows, no time, no media. Amazing, isn't it? John Bowd's All the Rage.
John Bowd's All the Rage. All the Rage. On Tracks FM. Tracks FM. Tracks FM. Men at Work Down Under.
John Bowd's All the Rage. With, as I said, we're seeing an all-time low in mainstream media reporting, TV, news, newspapers rather, even some of the social media stuff. I spoke to someone the other day and they said, what about your mate Corbyn? So I said, what about Mr. Corbyn? What's he, why don't he behave himself? And what's he done? Well, they're saying he should apologise. I said, apologise for what? I don't know, they just said he should apologise. I don't know. Listen, the person I spoke to is very intelligent, but that's the stuff that's getting rammed down people's... And you go, oh, John, I understand. Take it away, John, don't get me mad.
Well, come on, this is all the rage. We can both have a go at this, you know. It's I would love, by the way, the very same media that asked for that, I'd love them to ask me for apology, because I've got an answer and a half for you to anything that we come on to that. But listen, we might come on to that in the end if I manage to get through this particular tirade. Let me get through the tirade that I prepared, and then we'll have another one if we've got time at the end. We cannot even find any original slogans for our dark age. The World War II motto of keep calm and carry on, being seen on kitschy posters and rejigged all over the place, really just acts as a justification for austerity, the underlying message of keep calm and carry on actually being shut up and get on with it, and also invoking a war that everyone is obsessed with while knowing very little about it. Not exactly a fact-filled notion that they have. Carrying on, of course, is a defiant action, no doubt, especially when one trots down to the food bank or the pawn shop. In fact, the alarming growth of pawn shops upon British high streets would be, I imagine, a sign that something is very wrong, and not a time to take refuge in meaningless symbols of the past, not least your cheery, cheeky, cardigan-like sitcoms of simplistic caricatures. Moving on to politics, and then on to general life. Unfortunately, politics has become more and more, I think, genuinely meaningless, a little bit in line, like in line with the mainstream media, as Dave was just mentioning. It's basically all about spectacle and abuse. And most everyday life is pretty much the same. The biggest problems the conservative and reactionary forces, who actually started the culture war, have, is their lack of self-awareness or humour, combined with the inherent failure of their project and the intellectual and emotional inability to deal with that. For instance, if you look at social media, where, among other things, we see people interested in winding up others, as you would have said in my generation, or triggering, as the youth call it. For many people, mostly on the right again, this is the extent of doing politics. They log on and talk shit, trying to trigger people they do not like, such as feminists, liberals, or anyone slightly to the left. However, the real situation is that these people always embody the things they attack others for. They are hypersensitive, easily triggered, and will shout down or even try to quietly attack any person making an alternative viewpoint without actually engaging with anything to do with that alternative. This is a very valued quality in reactionary circles, and it is apparent all over the right, including within their figureheads, such as Donald Trump or Jordan Peterson. The whole of the British right wing at different levels can be set off very simply by simply mentioning the name of Labour MP Diane Abbott. This gets lots of screams and wails and just utterly incoherent stuff. In fact, sometimes you don't even need to mention her name. She just comes up. Although very few people actually ever tell you anything about her, about any of her achievements, about what she's done as an MP, about what she's done as a campaigner, about any of that stuff. Also mentioning socialism always elects screaming condemnation and personal attacks from these people, while showing the attacker up for their lack of knowledge and having no idea what they really are talking about, gets you an accusation of being authoritarian and hating democracy. Because so many of these people hate women or the left, they have no real knowledge about the world and or just have nothing to live for and little control over their lives. They lose every day and they know it. All the groups they pick on are always minorities and or vulnerable outsiders who have always had to fight for their place. And this is important in understanding the responses that we see. They use language that they think protects them, such as honour, courage, defence, patriotism, and most of all, freedom. They take the role of victim in everything and they hate any criticism because they know, frankly, that everything they say is bullshit. I do remember, actually, something that was brought up on an episode of Chapo Trap House a while back when they discussed why conservative comedians are not funny. And the main thesis was that because they are genuinely angry about liberalism or LGBT rights or abortion, that they basically can't write jokes. They just overspill into screaming anger and then try and whack a punchline on the end of it. So one reason why social media is so toxic is that these scared failures are the ones who make the most noise on it. Mix all of this into the inherent social belief that many of these people have, because the vast majority of them are middle class, that they have a higher right to be heard, and you have to listen but not respond, because responding equals a very epitome of trying to shut down free speech. Free speech is me saying something and you taking it, like you used to take a punch in the playground when you were younger. I honestly think just the whole term, the whole concept of free speech has become utterly meaningless, and that really is something of concern, especially in a supposed democracy. Anyway, there's no need for any debate over rights or the right to be heard. The question is why, when you have nothing to say, we must be forced to listen to you, and what effect this has on our society. No one has ever suppressed these people's right to speech or free expression. In fact, they have more opportunities than ever to broadcast. What people have done is respond and criticise, and that's what they don't like. They don't like having their failures shown up to them. And also, this clues into what I just said at the beginning of this section, because they started a culture war and they know that they've lost it. Anyway, I'm not going to give a platform or space like that to people who have dangerous views. I don't care how alternative you think they are. I'd be really interested to see if so many of the people that defend this kind of thing about giving platform to far right speakers would say, okay, just for the sake of debate, just for the sake of difference, why don't you get a Stalinist on your TV show? Why didn't you get somebody who will defend the gulags? Go ahead. And if you think about it, if you look at, say, when Andrew Neil employed David Irving in the Sunday Times back in the 90s, it's not really that much of a stretch, is it? No, but you would never go to the left. It's always about the right. There's no limit to how far to the right you can go. But you can't even do a do-si-do to the left in this country. They'll go crazy. Meanwhile, since 2016, we've seen a gross rise in hate crimes, mainly concerning Muslim people, but also Jewish people, LGBT people, anyone who looks Eastern European. And of course, last week, as I mentioned slightly earlier on, we had an attack on Bookmarks, the socialist bookshop, because apparently freedom of expression does not stretch to bookshops. By the way, if any of you are interested in supporting Bookmarks, aside from obviously buying stuff from them, which you can get on their website, there is a Solidarity Day this Saturday, the 11th, which I really wish I had the day off work, because I'd love to go to it. There's people are going to do some talks down there. Louise Raw is going to be there. She's a really interesting historian, very, very smart. I'd like to see that, but I can't go. But if you're out there, if you're around London, go down to Bookmarks. I can't remember the address, but you can look it up. It's around the corner from one of the TUC places off of Tottenham Court Road. Let's say that we do accept every demand for debate from these grown babies. Well, for starters, your spare time will disappear pretty quickly, and most important, the impact will be zero, because truth and fact do not matter to these people and to our wider society. Increasingly, nothing will change, nobody learns anything, and we all feel cheated. And this is spread throughout our society, and there's no real cultural response to it. To give you an example, many years ago, Akala, the great rapper and writer, was on a TV program about free speech on the BBC, and he took on Little Tommy Lennon, Stephen Robinson. Now, without doubt, Akala won this exchange, and he reduced Little Tommy to a quivering bitch, totally speechless. The result, however, has not been any change in Little Tommy's opinions on Muslims. In fact, he's actually got worse, and his public profile is now higher than it's ever been, even though his far-right organisation, the English Defence League, is dead, and he has failed to ever make any material difference in anything that he has ever done. Nevertheless, he's a celebrity. British culture is responding to the likes of him because it is broken and weak. Dave, do you want to say anything?
No, just before we go to the music break, You're absolutely right. And I remember when I was growing up, and we talk about the cheeky chappy comedies and all that, John, and absolutely, although I do like it, probably very racist, but I find it funny. And I say I find it funny because I've said it a thousand times, when I was growing up, I used to laugh at the National Front. I thought they were funny. I thought they were a joke. But I tell you this, the media exposure they got was limited to sort of World in Action, a 2-minute slot on a Nationwide, because we'd see, look, there's a march, it's 2 minutes, boom, gone. There was an in-depth World in Action one in the 80s, just after the Newham 7 arrests in East London in 1984, but it was limited. It was limited. Now, I'm not saying, I'm not including social media on that. I'm just saying TV and newspapers. So I looked at these people saying, justice, freedom of speech, justice, justice, justice. And then I think of people like the Guildford Four, who were in prison for 15 years, and the local, the constabulary at the time, were told by the original guilty parties, you have the wrong people in jail. I don't think it really got, I don't think it got even nearly at the same exposure as a bloke who was in, he'd done a bit of bird. We actually, where I was growing up, what he actually did was laughable. What he actually served back in the day, we'd say, yeah, sorry mate, you were in a holiday camp. So where was justice for the Guildford Four? Come on, get out there, come on. That two of those people are dead. They're dead. They're never going to get those 15 years back. Let's have justice. Let's have justice for that. The Guildford Four, why don't we concentrate on that? You're listening to John Bowd's All the Rage here on
Tracks FM. We'll be right back.
Yeah, Rage Against the Machine. John Bowd said, now I'm playing it, he's going to go nuts. Yeah, look, I made it. I said the National Front were funny because I, as an ethnic minority, I thought they were funny. But as I spoke to John offline, they were funny because they just said, I don't like anyone black. And we were open and honest about it. But please don't say justice and mainstream media and justice. We want justice. Just say what you mean, because I know what you mean. I know who you are, because I've dealt with you people before. Just say it as it is, like the National Front in the 70s. John, take it away.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. And when we get to, at least when I get to the Antifa show that I'm going to do, we will talk about what I think is people's inability in the modern world to actually take fascism seriously. Or at least it's an inability to take it seriously if you're white and straight and well off. Anyway, getting back to the crux of tonight's issue, anti-intellectualism. That's what we're seeing now, basically. It's anti-intellectualism, the dog ends of neoliberalism, and that bullshit end of history narrative have brought us to where we are. And where we are is the death of the future. No direction, no definition, and no sense of worth. Hiding in patriotism will not help you because it is brainless, in that you are required, literally, to not think, decommissioning your critical faculties. It teaches you that the world goes to hell if anything advances, that this is my country, even though I haven't got fuck all to my name, even though I do nothing practical or worthwhile for it, etc., etc. There is always the non-belonging argument rolled out to anyone different. Go somewhere else equals that you don't actually have an argument to come back with. Any rebellion that we once saw in the punk movement or the rave movement is long gone now, utterly co-opted. It's still nice to listen to the records, though. Yes, I'm listening to old records. Yeah, all right, fine. I'm a contradiction. It was easily co-opted and resold, however. Its edges blunted and its politics removed, and Britain has produced nothing of such awesome, scathing worth since, or impact. Instead, it has taken its pathetic, watered-down culture of past worship and repetition because most believe they cannot produce anything new. I think this is a terrible message to send out, especially to young people. It doesn't, well, I mean, without being contradictory and looking to the past, it does seem like in other times some people were more driven to overcome the mundanity around them. And a lot of that just now seems to be completely lost, or maybe it's been overrun by consumerism, I don't know. Another aspect of what Mark Fisher discussed in Capitalist Realism, in fact the main focus of the book, was trying to show that there was a lie in the accepted norm of there being no alternative to the present system. Again, this harks back to what we talked about last week in the 90s, and when Blair came to power with New Labour, it was basically just an extension of conservative ideals. Nothing was really going to change. They were comparatively much nicer. I mean, they gave us a minimum wage. They gave us actually a comparatively better NHS, although it was still slowly moving towards the privatisation that John Major's government had started, and it got a lot worse. But, you know, they really were just a slightly fluffier version, perfect for the times of laid-back, polo-necked people who couldn't be bothered to ask questions about the world. There's always alternatives, and you shouldn't just listen to miserable, moaning old geezers like me. You should get out there and prove me wrong about all of this. If I have any message I want to send, especially to the youth tonight, it's that all of what I've said tonight, make it disappear, make it wrong. Going forward, we have intellectual failures at the head of the table. It's as simple as that. We've got to get rid of a lot of things before we start. So we've got to get rid of Jeremy Vile, who is an insult to the working class, and all those shows that I talked earlier on about police repressing people and bailiffs and other scum that portray these bullies as somehow admirable and heroic. We also need to talk about the mainstream media without latching on to that awful tag of mainstream media, because it's going to again become a meaningless term. We also need to get over the fact that absolutely none of us need to know what a Kardashian is. Okay, my spell checker on this computer doesn't even recognize that word. I also think the argument for reducing or abolishing fees for higher education has a major aspect here, particularly in the arts, because they are simply unrepresentative right now, and people with talent but no money do not get a look in. This is not only unjust, but it also makes our culture less interesting and weaker. Not every film needs to be a kitchen sink drama, and not every album needs to be a cry against injustice, but some of them bloody well need to be. Also, we need different perspectives on the world, simple as that. We have no idea how much talent is out there. We need a revolutionary overthrow of ignorance. Let us campaign to annihilate working class miseducation and ignorance. We must stop being our own enemy. Life is hard enough, and those with power hate us enough. So save your scorn for them, not the gaggle thrown up on TV. If free speech is the only the right to offend, lie about, and scapegoat minorities, then what worth is free speech? As Matt Chrisman from Chapo once said, how can you expression of free speech be of any worth if it cannot affect anything? You can't ever really be free unless you can have some kind of effect on your own life, on the community around you, on any of those things. So going online and screaming about someone doing something or posting something is ultimately irrelevant. With all of that in mind, let's turn to the Labour Party, presently running on an anti-austerity programme and working within communities to empower them in taking better control of their lives. The party is also looking to make education more available to working class students, and members are seeing more working class representatives coming through in the party. They've also seen the biggest growth in membership of any left-wing party in Europe. We have to be more radical. Stop siding with your enemies. They will never accept you and only ever treat you like crap. Now is the time to build working class power, whatever ideology you follow. And we need to demand a better life for all. We also need better entertainment, because this is more important than perhaps it should be. Again, the main message of why I'm going on about all of this stuff. Not just the fact that I'm a miserable old git who hates most television music. In our time, having integrity has become an act of dissent. The far right must be shut down, no exceptions. They are a threat to democracy, and we must use strong action to oppose them. Just saying you like a bunch of people has no effect on their lives, especially at the material level of engagement. Folks, it isn't good enough to say, I don't have a problem with black people, I don't have a problem with gay people, any of that kind of stuff, because that doesn't mean anything to them. They'll still be abused walking down the street. They're still under threat of being beaten up. You living in suburbia not having a problem with them means absolutely sod all. It's nice that you're not a racist, but that's not being a racist. Now is about action, not words. Words don't mean anything. Social justice cannot happen without a challenge to the economic organisation of society, so we must demand more homes and better jobs and more affordability, if not a universal basic income. But that is a subject for another show, because we don't have time to go into every argument about that tonight. So how do we start this revolutionary rhetoric? Well, you can start by turning the telly off. Okay, switch off. Don't watch daytime TV. It's shite. There's nothing on there. Don't watch these miserable shows from the past that are just really designed to effectively make you believe that we haven't created anything for years and years. Ignore the culture war. It's all ideas without content. And don't tell me that I need to see both sides when the other side has become so extreme that we can now have the situation, for instance, that we had this evening. So coming back to what me and Dave were talking about before we went live tonight. For many of you might know this, and for those of you outside of Britain, Boris Johnson, former Foreign Secretary and, to my great shame, my MP, has taken yet again to the pages of one of the newspapers, the Daily Telegraph, to pretend that he's bumbling, to pretend that he's just kind of putting his foot in it in that ever so cute way that people with the arrogance of his class often do, by saying that he should ban the burqa like they have supposedly in Denmark. He thinks that, however, that burqas are not very pretty and that they make women look like letterboxes or bank robbers, and they must take them off when they come to see me in my surgery, blah, blah, blah. Which would be interesting, actually, Boris, because I didn't know you actually ran a fucking surgery, because I've never seen you in this area except when there's an election on. Anyway, he's then done that. People have obviously been disgusted by this because it is dog whistle politics. And it's funny that this comes a little while after he's had conversations with Steve Bannon, who now seems to be trying to tour around Europe and cause as much strife and trouble as he did in America when he was running the Donald Trump campaign, which seemed to hinge on hating Muslims, Mexicans and women. And of course, there are calls for him to apologise. And there's a few people in the Conservative Party who have said this. And he has said, no, I won't apologise because I don't have to. I was right, is what he said. Now, please, I don't just like to get into comparisons and what about you, but certainly in this country, since recent times when we've had a fierce row about anti-Semitism and where it shows up and where it doesn't, it's simply just not acceptable that the people on the right and people on the left are held to completely different criteria. It's not democratic. Can you imagine if Ken Livingstone, after the trouble he got in with some of the comments he made, just sort of said, I'm right, and I don't have to address this at all. No, we wouldn't have accepted it. The press would have gone insane. So, this evening on BBC News, the news at 6 o'clock, they went to Boris's constituency down the road from here in Uxbridge, and they asked about what people thought about the comments. It did vox pops about what people thought about the comments. And, of course, one of the things that came up is, well, you know, the face veil itself. And, of course, you had all of these croning just freaks sitting there going, well, I think it's horrible, I don't like it, you don't know who's behind there, it might be a man, it might be, I don't like the face veil. And I just find this utterly disgusting. Can you imagine if you went into these, and I say not things I'm supporting, but just as an example, if you go into to a local community and just go, so what do you think of men dressing as women? And when you get somebody say, I don't like it, I think it's freaky. When you get somebody like, as Nick Griffin was said when he was on Question Time, you know, two men kissing is creepy. Why on earth would you put that on the television? Because it's just promoting hatred. If you said to them, oh, what do you think of the way Orthodox Jewish people dress? No, well, who cares what you think? What has that got to do with the news? Why would you go and try and sanction that kind of hatred? That really, BBC, you know, I am no fan of the mainstream media, but I have defended the BBC on many, many occasions. But that is becoming harder and harder. Because when you do stuff like this, you are genuinely completely out of order. There is no justification, none, for having that kind of thing. You are literally promoting hatred. You are putting people of utter intolerance on television. But more importantly, people say, well, why shouldn't they have their voice? Well, it's simple, because the person interviewing them never puts a question to them. They never put any of the few questions that I've just thrown off the top of my head. They don't ask them anything like that. They don't ask, what do you think of people dressing like this? What do you think of people dressing like that? What do you think? Fellas, when you take your shirts off in this summertime and walk down the street exposing your supposed muscles and your incredibly ugly and unoriginal tattoos, I don't like it. I don't like you dressing like that. I think it's unfair to you know, because women can't do that, really. And I think that you just look like a twat. Is that going to make any difference to you? Are you going to say, no, okay, I'm going to dial down my alpha bullshit? No, you're not. You're not going to do any of that. I have no right to demand that you do. And equally, you have no right to demand that anyone, Muslim, Jewish, whatever, must dress in a way that makes you feel comfortable. Seriously, who the hell do you think you are, even actually making that suggestion? So, badly done, BBC. I doubt anyone's going to listen to this, but in my opinion, I think we should have a protest outside one of their Portland place studio. One of the things I would happily protest this. I think it's absolutely disgusting. I didn't mention one thing tonight, by the way, Dave. We'll come back to you in a sec. But one of the problems with Britain, I didn't have time to mention this. I think I do now. Is another one of the problems we have in Britain is we're beholden to a social system which has feudal overtones and, of course, a wonderful class system. And the fact is that most people like doing what they're told. They don't like to appear like they're doing what they're told, but they organise themselves into certain criteria that looks like they have a choice, but they have a very limited choice. And what they really like, and this is one of the things that bothers me, is they don't like anything that isn't considered British or white, but they also like people like Jacob Rees-Mogg. He does well in things like British politics and Boris because they are the privileged type that many British people love to be whipped by. Perhaps physically, I don't know. That's your business. But certainly in a cultural way. And then we get lots of, you know, calls from the centre ground, the vile centre ground, for reaching out and understanding. Reaching out to this side is, I mean, if you didn't get the message I was trying to communicate tonight any more so, you don't reach out to the far right because they don't like you. Okay? These are people who are willing to beat people. Some of them are willing to kill people. Anyone remember Combat 18? You know, you don't give a platform to these people because their intent is dangerous. And also, you know, again, I'll come back to this in the end when we do the Antifa episode, but on the issue of any violence that grows up in that situation, when you go out into the street to march with the specified intention of saying entire ethnic groups, entire religious groups, perhaps even people of a certain sexuality, don't belong in our society and we wish to exclude them, that is a declaration of violence, violent intent, because something like that simply would not be a great deal of violence. So whenever you are met and anything kicks off and, you know, somebody from Antifa gives you a slap, I don't care. Because what you're trying to do is far, far worse. I remember there was a thing in one of the rallies in America. It might have been at Charlottesville or whatever. It might have been the one where at Trump's inauguration, where Richard Spencer got punched. These people have been talking about, you know, putting things online and harassing Jewish people and talking about gas chambers and talking about rounding up Mexicans. And then one of them got punched, and there was all these responses from alt-right people going, "I don't feel safe going out in the street now." Fuck off. Anyway, so that, you know, come on, people, cultural change. We can do better than this. That's essentially the conclusion of tonight's message. Dave, save these people.
I think I just think the establishment, and it's not an alternative way of thinking, I just think we've got a political party who represent a large majority of a certain age group that say, well, I don't believe that qualification for running the country should be by benefiting financially the few and not the many. We've got a population that want free, better services, free education, better NHS. We have a population that wants to redistribute wealth rather than pinpoint it at just certain establishments and tax havens. All sorts. And I just think, and I'm hoping, fingers crossed, I haven't said what political party, I'm just saying what the majority are saying. And all those things, and stop the hate things, and I just think that the mainstream media, which is multi-billionaires, I just think they're up for a... just hope, fingers crossed, that they don't get beaten. That we have a true alternative point of view. And since the mid-90s up until 2007, 2008, everyone was the same. Everyone was the same. Everyone thought the same. Politically, everything was so middle. And no one had a different point of view to say, I don't agree with that. A lot of that was built with social media, and I think there's no way in hell that the mainstream media, just everyone decided, mainstream media wise, to do this campaign to discredit people and make out they're mad and mental and don't know what they're talking about and look a stupid idiot, stupid snowflake, to collectively do that. There's got to be money behind it. It's got to be a lot of money, because the alternative for the majority, and it is the majority, I think the mainstream media have got it wrong. I think they've tapped into the wrong nerve. I think people have just fed up. I think they see, looking at a lot of surveys, good surveys, they find Corbyn, whether you like him or not, they find he's being bullied. That is the general consensus, that they feel he's being bullied, that he's not given a chance to speak back. And I know LBC has been really trying, and that's been the callers. I don't know how these people get time to listen to the radio all day, to call all day. It's ridiculous. But that's the feedback that they got, and I think the mainstream media got it wrong. And I think they've fallen into the classic age-old mistake. They misjudge society. I think they've misjudged society. All the money in the world, that's fine, good luck to you. But if you get it wrong, if you misjudge society, and I'm talking prime ministers who've, for example, fallen on their arse because they devalued the pound, for example. No prime minister's recovered from that. And I think the mainstream media, very similarly, have misjudged society's feeling on stuff. I do. John?
Yeah.
I'll leave your thoughts. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I'll just say in closing to that, I completely agree with you, Dave. I put it another way. I think the mainstream media have lost their shit. They don't know how to deal with a post-Blair society where we're not all middle class now. So that's the main issue that they're having. And they just don't... Their reporting methods have just lost credibility. Yeah, let's not forget one thing whenever you want to talk about Corbyn Labour or anything else. Just before this time last year, about, what was it, 14 points behind in an election, not that I pay attention to polls, behind, manifesto was released. All of a sudden, that narrowed very tightly to us getting a hung parliament. You want to know why? Go read the manifesto. Also, lastly, before I sign off for this week, United Voices of the World, their cleaner members are on strike down in Chelsea and Kensington Council. They're on strike yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Please send them your solidarity. Shout out to Claudia, friend of the show, and who will be coming back on at some point in the future too. So, yeah, that's me. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. And thank you, listeners.
All the Rage with John Bowd. www.tracksfm.org.